Michigan State football fans are breathing a huge sigh of relief today as MSU makes its hire for a head coach, Mel Tucker, to lead its football program. Tucker has ties to Michigan State from when he was on Nick Saban's staff 2 decades ago. Given the abrupt nature of head coach Mark D'Antonio's departure earlier this month, a lot of people see Tucker as the best option. But the hire was expensive, and the circumstances surrounding it exposed some serious fractures in the college sports world, possibly also for Michigan's higher ed landscape. We invited author and sports commentator John U. Bacon to talk to us about it. John, welcome.
Thank you, April.
So regardless of what we may have learned about Michigan State University today and their hire of Mel Tucker, is there anything that this moment says to us about the NCAA and college athletics?
College football itself, it's even more insane than I thought. How's that? And I did not think too highly of it 2 days ago.
The fact that they would go all in for someone who had already turned them down once and who they didn't really have a strong, shall we say, courting relationship with.
There's no relationship here prior, basically.
Right.
Other than he was at Michigan State 20 years ago under Nick Saban, now at Alabama, who was at Michigan State. And Saban apparently pitched very hard for Mel Tucker, who's now at Colorado, or was at Colorado, for this job. So it's a pretty thin thread, to say the least. He did not want the job. He said no already. In his first and only season as a head coach at Colorado, which is not that great a football school right now and not that great a football conference, he went 5-7. That's not good. And they paid him $5.5 million. Worth noting, April, because you pay a man $5.5 million does not automatically make him worth $5.5 million. It's very hard to say that and say you can't pay players in the same breath.
Have hires been made on shakier relationships?
Yeah, but not very often.
Okay.
And the reason is this. Bill Beekman is the current AD at Michigan State. He is uniquely unqualified for this job. He ran the Alumni Association. He was the secretary for the Board of Trustees. Zero experience in athletics. He's not got a Rolodex. Look that up, kids. Doesn't know coaches. Coaches don't know him. He has no relationships with anybody out there, basically. Where Mark Hollis, the previous AD, had tons of these, of course. So he had to scramble, he panicked, and they backed up the Brinks truck, and that's what you get.
On Tuesday, the president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, was in front of Congress urging America's lawmakers to put restrictions on whether college athletes can earn money from endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
The schools just can't pay this kind of money, he says. And here we are with Michigan State paying $30 million for a coach.
The timing is not good for that. I would say that Emmert's case is undermined by Michigan State in this case. Also, what Emmert conveniently elided in this case is that the name, image, likeness ruling passed by the NCAA at gunpoint, basically, they're forced to do it. The money does not come from the universities. That's a crucial distinction. Otherwise, Title IX gets engaged and other things change accordingly and should. If Coca-Cola wants to pay an athlete $1 million, that is not coming out of Michigan State's pocket. So I don't even know what he's talking about at this point.
But, I mean, could we even just, as you say, complete the elision and say that boosters don't have enough money to pay athletes? Would it be better if we just made a clean breast of this whole situation?
It'd be a lot of things would be better.
Yeah.
How about that? Look, the fundamental thing to me is that in basketball and football, they're the only sports in the world that do not have paid minor leagues to get to the pros. Baseball and hockey have those. So we don't have those problems in baseball and hockey. So if you're a hotshot 18-year-old, you have to go play college basketball or football to get to the next level. That's crazy. You get a lot of guys who don't want to be students, who shouldn't be students, who want to get paid, doing things they don't want to do. So as long as that is the equation and the NCAA's got a monopoly over those guys, any solution is going to be pretty weird.
I've just got to wonder at this point if the former MSU head coach, recently departed, Mark D'Antonio, really hates the school, really secretly hates the school.
You know what? It is now a fair question. For all his talk of loyalty, for all that he did for Michigan State in terms of getting the football program back to the top 10 and so on, man, he's leaving the cupboard bare for the next guy. He took a $4.3 million quote-unquote loyalty bonus and then quit like 2 weeks later, so there's your loyalty. And his timing could not have been worse. This is the end after the musical chairs ends every year. It's the day before the recruiting season ends. He put them in a truly horrible situation, and this is what they had to do.
If we could just drill back down to the conference for a moment. I mean, there's a huge, huge imbalance with Ohio State able to spend the kind of money that every other school would like to spend. And Michigan, MSU, and some other schools just kind of hanging in there and overextending themselves. Is there an end to this cycle?
This cycle is called an arms race, and there's no end to it. There's no cap in sight because it's not based on marketplace. It's based on the alumni enthusiasm for winning, which has no limitation. Now, to be clear, Michigan and Ohio State are right there together. Michigan is one of the biggest spenders in college football. State is pretty close. There's also a big division between the SEC, the Southeastern Conference, the Big Ten, and all the others, and it's based on TV. So the money is insane, and it's getting insaner, if you will. And look, I can make a marketplace argument for this, but I can also tell you that if you're a lecturer one at Michigan, you get about $10,000 a semester. At some point, what do we care about? You have to ask that question.
Forgive me for inserting my Buckeye perspective in the financial analysis there, but John,
she's been outed, by the way, on that one.
John Ubakin, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, April.
The question of how the MSU Board of Trustees handled the hiring of D'Antonio's replacement is the subject of Daniel Howe's latest column for the Detroit News, a situation he says demonstrates fallibility of elected bodies of trustees. Daniel, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
So the issue is not so much the chosen candidate, but maybe how the process worked.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately we'll find out. We'll find out if he's the right guy. I think they wanted someone who was younger, who could have some staying power. You know, you don't want to be doing this every 2 or 3 years, certainly, because you can't build a program that way. You need consistency. But I have been focused on the governance of the big three universities in Michigan. We are the only state in the United States that elects the trustees for its big three universities on statewide partisan at-large ballots. It becomes a very political process. I've talked to people in both parties, and they tell me how it happens at convention time. It is not the way to pick leadership and governors of multi-billion dollar institutions funded by the taxpayers.
You go into this a bit in the column about there being a big difference between management and governance. And the fact that a trustee was, you know, pretty, it appears to be the point person in this whole deal. Can you say a little bit more about what's wrong with that approach? I mean, why that's a problem to have the AD, you know, in the backseat of the car?
If you have management, let them manage. And I think one of the things that I see going on a lot at these universities, I used to see it a lot at Detroit City Council, to be frank, were council members that didn't understand the difference between governance and management. And they were constantly trying to manage the business of the city. And I think you have the same thing in the context of the university. It's important to note that a lot of these people who do get these jobs and are elected on these ballots, a lot of them, very few of them, I've looked at these and do not have corporate experience. They don't come out of the corporate world. They're not selected or recruited for their expertise in finance, law, business management. They just happen to be friendly with people in the party, and therefore they get put up and they run. If you look at the pedigree in the background of some of these people, these are not the kind of people that you would put on the board of a multi-billion dollar corporation.
Can you think of any immediate examples of how the process should work?
I mentioned in the piece how Michigan Jim Hackett, when he was interim AD there, and he went out to hire went after, I guess is the best way to put it, Jim Harbaugh when he was at the San Francisco 49ers. I think Hackett made it very clear that he did not want big donor involvement. He was going to be the person that would run the process. I believe he worked with some consultants. That's kind of commonplace. And Michigan State worked with some consultants. But, you know, you're supposed to let the athletic director do the job without a lot of interference. And I think there may not have been actual interference at Michigan State, but I think when you had a board member kicking up some, making headlines and then dismissing the first candidate as a flake, a waffling flake to be precise, that doesn't speak very well about the university in terms of how they go about the process by denigrating someone who is considered to be one of the up-and-comers coaches in the country.
This Michigan State University board has faced numerous problems. What's the way forward at this point, given that the governance structure isn't changing anytime soon?
Yeah, that's right. It would pay you. You'd have to amend the state constitution, and I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know. I know that Governor Snyder, when I believe it was George Perlis, stepped aside and left early, He decided to put in Nancy Schlichting, who is a former CEO of Henry Ford Health System, and someone I've known for years, and is a real pro, very smart, a good executive, also on the board of Duke. She lasted less than a year there, and I think part of it was a frustration of a CEO who, type who comes in there and kind of looks at the dysfunction of the board, makes her recommendations. Of course, the majority of people kind of ignored her recommendations, and she's like, you know, I don't need to do this anymore, and she quit. She was the kind of person that I think, personally, you need to salt these boards with. You don't need them all to be corporate types, but it's certainly important to have some people who have boardroom experience dealing with very complex, large organizations that are public-facing. And that is clearly a school like Michigan State, or Michigan, or Wayne State, for that matter. And by the way, we haven't talked about it, but there's this ongoing Donnybrook right now at Wayne State, which is very similar. The board is fighting with itself. It's factionalized. One side wants to fire the president. The other side doesn't. They've got one or two more votes, so he stays on. And it's like a clown show every time they have a meeting. And you're like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
I mean, and this is endemic, and that's why I keep pointing some of this stuff out, because I think this is an issue. We are unique as a state, and I don't think we're getting, and I think a lot of people, based on my incoming email, I don't think a lot of people think we're getting what we ought to get for institutions that have such great reputations nationally and even internationally.
Daniel Howes is a columnist and associate business editor at the Detroit News. Daniel, good talking to you again.
Thanks talking to you.